This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
nurses are earning 931 RTGS dollars, which equals to about $60.
That's Kudzai Zanawash reporting on Zimbabwe's nursing crisis. Details coming up also. South African Airways says it plans to cancel nearly all its domestic, regional and international flights for tomorrow and Saturday because of a planned union strike. And the Democratic Republic of Congo today began administering a new Ebola vaccine. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. It's been 10 days since Harare's municipal nurses joined the long list of workers who have said they are too poorly paid to go to work in Zimbabwe. The country's economic decline has eroded the buying power of their salaries, which have remained stagnant in a deteriorating economy. Reporter Kudzai Zanawash has more from Harare.
Simbarashe Tafirenyika is the president of the Zimbabwe Urban and Rural Council Nurses Workers Union. He says, contrary to local media reports, the nurses have not been striking.
We want to make it clear to all residents of Harare and to all citizens of Zimbabwe that Harare City Council nurses are not on strike, but are severely incapacitated.
He says, nurses previously earned $931 a month when Zimbabwe used US dollars as the main currency. Now that Zimbabwe uses a local currency, nurses are earning 931 RTGS dollars, which equals to about $60. The Harare City Council has said that nurses who fail to report for duty are on an illegal strike. This is happening against a backdrop of a failing health system in Zimbabwe. For more than 2 months, public hospital doctors have not been coming to work, saying they lacked the funds to travel to work. The government says the doctors are on an illegal strike and it has fired more than 250 doctors. Tafirenyika says nurses are not afraid.
We are not afraid of being fired. That's why we are giving this press statement. We are not on strike. And we want the public to know, we want the government to know that we are highly incapacitated. What is happening is the nurses cannot go to work due to economical problems.
Tafirenyika says what's more worrying is that there is a lack of will to quickly resolve the situation. He says the city fathers are reluctant to engage them as a union. He adds that if the trend persists, then they will have to approach the Minister of Local Government for help. Over the past year, Zimbabwe has experienced triple-digit inflation, shortages of foreign currency, cash, food, fuel, and medicines. Health workers and many public sector employees have said they no longer earn enough to pay for transportation to get to work. Medical staff also say when they are at work, there are no medicines or equipment to treat patients. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zanawash from Harare.
Like most immigrants, Tukaono Mafosa had to start at the bottom, but he worked hard in his new country, Sweden, became a city planner, and got involved in politics. Now he's come full circle, visiting and helping his native Zimbabwe. From Bulawayo, Kudzani Musengi sent us this report.
41-year-old Mafosa is a councillor in the town of Umeå in Sweden's northeast after being elected last year on the ticket of the Swedish Social Democratic Party, the country's oldest political party. Mafosa settled in Sweden in 2009 after his first foray into the diaspora in the United States ended in 1997 when a family tragedy compelled him to return home after a year in pursuit of the American dream. Starting with language classes, he eventually earned a master's degree as a city planner. Maposa, who exudes a passion for service to others, says he got a chance to get involved in politics after interacting with members of the Social Democrats.
As time went by and as conversations deepened, culminating in last year, I was asked to stand for election in the city that I live in. And I put my hat into the ring and I was lucky enough to be elected.
Estimates say over a quarter of Zimbabwe's population live outside the country, where many have menial jobs and try to save a bit of money to send home. Maposa says Sweden's freedom and tolerance of divergent views have helped him a lot. He bemoans the culture of hostile politics in Zimbabwe, which he feels holds the country back.
Our aim is to develop the country. Our aim is to uplift our peoples and create a standard of living. Even though the roads to the goal might be different, the goal is still the same. And I think that is what is perhaps not evident in the same level, in the same way here in Zimbabwe, where there's a lot of polarization and demonizing one another and failing to accept that the other's intentions are also ultimately aimed towards uplifting the country.
Maposa believes that Zimbabweans still have the potential to turn their country's fortunes around despite the country's worsening economic downturn.
I think Zimbabwe is a land that is blessed both with an abundance of human capital and an abundance of natural resources. And the present challenges that the country faces, I think, are challenges that are not beyond the country. The capacity to work and deal through them is in Zimbabwe, as long as maybe a spirit of acceptance and tolerance finds space.
Maposa visits his native country regularly and recently accompanied the Swedish development agency, SIDA, on a mission to empower women in rural communities.
Many a time, you know, especially given the economic situation that is in Zimbabwe and a lot of people migrating and moving to regional countries and so on, a lot of the times it's women and children who are left and they're quite vulnerable.
Maposa says he is happy that he and his Swedish colleagues were able to help by arranging funds for water purifiers and other aid items after Cyclone Idai ravaged part of the country earlier this year. Maposa is currently pursuing further studies in European policy and politics. He is coy about his political ambitions, but says he does not rule out pursuing higher office in Sweden or Europe in general, should the opportunity present itself. Reporting for VOA from Bulawayo, I am Kudzanai Musengi.
Cash-strapped South African Airways says it plans to cancel nearly all its domestic, regional, and international flights for tomorrow and Saturday after two of its unions said they're going on strike over pay and planned layoffs. The airline says none of its flights will depart from any airport in the country, while only those from international destinations will return to South Africa. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
These are some of the dozens of South African Airways SAA planes landing at O.R. Tambo International Airport in Johannesburg and likely to get grounded starting Friday. The National Union of Metal Workers of South Africa, NUMSA, and the South African Cabin Crew Association, SACCA, representing 3,000 of SAA's 5,000 workers, are demanding an 8% pay rise. The airline is offering 5.9%. The unions also want SAA to abandon plans to retrench up to 900 workers. Glali Glali, SAA spokesperson, says the cancellation are a big blow to the airline's finances and passengers, considering that it operates up to 104 flights daily.
If the strike is going to take place for a protracted period, the airline is risking and may face the risk of closing, which in turn could result in much more job losses and in turn could also have an impact on the value chain insofar as the aviation industry is concerned.
The unions are sticking to their guns, insisting that the strike is the only way to get their grievances heard. Zazi Sibanyoni Mugambi is president of SACCA.
That argument of they do not have the money does not work. Reasons being, the pilots have received a 5.9% increase. Our 8% that we are demanding is a fraction of what the increase of the pilots costs.
And Ivan Jim is the general secretary of NUMSA.
The strike will be an indefinite strike until our demands are met. However, we want to end the strike before it starts. We will be available for negotiation to ensure that we end the strike. We're not looking for something else except that the demands of our members must be met.
Tlale says SAA has revised the offer that is being proposed at a meeting with the unions.
When we get that indication that, yes, they will be able to go back to work, we'll then make a public announcement as to when their flights will resume.
Passengers already booked to travel in the next 2 days have been urged to contact the airline or their travel agents for assistance. SAA says partner airlines, including SA Express, Mango and SA Airlink, are not affected. The airline is expected to lose over $3 million per day. Experts have warned that the airline's future hangs in the balance. Years of mismanagement and corruption have left the airline with accumulative losses of close to $2 billion in the past 13 years. Finance Minister Tito Mboweni recently painted a glim picture of the airline, saying the government has had to take over its $600 million debt. There have been talks of privatizing the airline, but this has been strongly resisted by the unions and other public interest organizations. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Democratic Republic of Congo today began administering a new Ebola vaccine. The country plans to vaccinate about 50,000 people over 4 months with a new drug produced by the Johnson & Johnson Pharmaceutical Company. DRC officials say the drug will be used to complement another vaccine, which already has been administered to more than 250,000 people in the country, most of them health workers and contacts of Ebola patients. The DRC has battled the second largest outbreak of the deadly virus for 15 months in the eastern part of the country. Regional violence and poor infrastructure have hampered the effort by making it dangerous for health workers to reach patients. About 3,000 people have been infected in this outbreak and nearly 2,200 have died. However, health authorities and aid agencies in the DRC say the use of the earlier vaccine by the Merck drug company appears to have helped limit its spread. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The foreign ministers of Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan met with the U.S. Treasury Secretary and the World Bank President in Washington last week. They reaffirmed their commitment to reach a comprehensive, cooperative, adaptive, sustainable, and mutually beneficial agreement on filling and operating the Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam. The ministers agreed that the World Bank and the United States would support and attend 2 meetings as observers. If an agreement is not reached by January 15th, the foreign ministers agreed that Article 10 of the 2015 Khartoum Declaration of Principles will be invoked. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, spoke with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi about the impact of U.S. involvement on de-escalation of tension over the dam.
Well, I think the main outcome from this meeting is that there was a reaffirmation that the discussions should be continued at technical level, and the political meeting in Washington was an effort to have a clearing of the air so that all sides were in agreement about where things stood and a recognition that to move forward, they would need to rekindle the discussions at the technical level. So I think it's an important de-escalation from the rising tensions and some of the alarmist statements that were being made regarding the proceedings. And it's a reaffirmation of the declaration of principles that the countries have been operating under since 2015 when they first agreed on some guiding principles for handling the negotiations.
The ministers also agreed to work toward completion of the agreement by January 15th. And that they will hold 4 technical governmental meetings at the level of water ministers. The ministers agreed also that the World Bank and the United States would support and attend the meetings as observers. What role can Washington and the World Bank play to bridge the existing gap between Ethiopia and Egypt?
The involvement of the United States and the World Bank is new from what has been happening at the technical level. And I think the main value they would bring is help with trust building among all the parties, and in essence, assuring all sides that their interest will not be ignored and that whatever agreement emerges will have taken into consideration the concerns that each side may bring. And so I think it just provides some assurances, particularly for the Egyptians, who are most worried about the effects that the dam will bring for downstream water flow levels for the Nile. It assures them that they'll have some other independent and autonomous parties who can help ensure that the negotiations are as fair as possible.
If an agreement is not reached by January 15th, the foreign ministers agreed that Article 10 of the 2015 Khartoum Declaration of Principles will be invoked. What does that entail?
Article 10 is simply the principle that there will be a peaceful settlement of disputes, and effectively it's saying if there are disagreements in the process of negotiations that all parties agree that they will try to continue to resolve any differences through negotiations, and they can bring in a mediator if necessary. And so I see it as just a reaffirmation that all sides are recommitting to the fact that this issue will be resolved through normal diplomatic channels.
But failing to reach an acceptable agreement by the three countries, what are the potential scenarios?
We could see continued efforts on the part of Egypt to try to escalate pressure on Ethiopia and try to draw in more international actors to threaten sanctions or other repercussions for Ethiopia if it doesn't agree to a different timetable for releasing water through the dam so that it has minimal impact on downstream water levels. I think a second option would be that Ethiopia would just continue to proceed with its own schedule for filling the dam and following the previously agreed to levels and stages for that process. And I think the third scenario would be that after some posturing and further back and forth, that the sides would come back together again and try to further refine their differences on the technical issues about what needs to be done, how quickly the dam should be filled up, what the water levels that should be released will be, and come up with some sort of compromise that will be acceptable and will be something they can use moving forward.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa's Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. In the latest effort to bolster the numbers of endangered black rhinos, South Africa has sent 17 of them to Malawi, where they will be protected by air and land from poachers eager for their horns. The rhinos have been released into Lwindo National Park after being captured in South Africa's KwaZulu-Natal province and quarantined. It's one of the largest translocations of the massive animals. At one point, hunters and poachers had reduced their numbers to 2,475, but the World Wildlife Fund says they're back to over 5,000. They became extinct in Malawi in the 1970s, and four were reintroduced in 1993. British troops are training local anti-poaching rangers, and the rhinos will be fitted with GPS tracking devices and monitored from the air. The founder of a Malawian maternity clinic for poor women says it has set a record, delivering more than 8,800 babies with not a single death of mother or child. For her efforts improving access to safe childbirth, Charity Salima has become known as Malawi's Florence Nightingale, the English founder of modern nursing. Lamek Masina reports from Lilongwe.
Grace Chakudza gave birth in November to a healthy baby boy, her fourth child, at Achikondi Community Clinic. It opened in 2008 to help poor women safely give birth. Since then, the clinic has performed more than 8,800 successful deliveries without the loss of a mother or a child, according to its founder. That's a record number in Malawi, where the United Nations Children's Fund says the average mortality rate per 1,000 births is 22 deaths for babies and 6 for mothers. Chakudza appreciates the care she got from the clinic. She says there is a big difference. There is congestion in public hospitals. Women give birth on the floor, and sometimes one nurse is responsible for 3 pregnant mothers. This compromises the health of mothers and children. But here, I received good treatment. The number of successful deliveries reported by the clinic means it beats not only the global average of 17 newborn deaths per 1,000 births, but also the average of rich nations. Britain this year gave clinic founder Charity Salima the Commonwealth Points of Light Award, calling her Malawi's Florence Nightingale, the English founder of modern nursing. Salima credits the way the clinic handles the medical emergencies.
All that success has come in because we can live where there is a complication as soon as possible. Early detection of any abnormality and any referral. That is what makes us to be successful.
The clinic is free of charge, and the building, constructed by donations from Scotland and the Norwegian Nurses Organization, the US-based charity Freedom from Fistula Foundation, which helps treat the childbirth injury, funds the clinic. Lita Kaunda is the community leader at Area 23, where the clinic is situated. She says before this clinic, many pregnant mothers were giving birth on their way to the hospital because of the distance they were traveling. Despite their reputation, Salima says the clinic does have challenges.
Sometimes we lack resources. It could be financial resources. We don't have much resources. We would also want if we could have this building, like have a solar electricity, because sometimes electricity is on and off.
Salima hopes the clinic will get additional support and do even more to reduce Malawi's newborn and maternal deaths. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Lilongwe.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhibi in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Adrias Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. VOA. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.